The content of this podcast is provided for general informational purposes only and is not intended as, nor should it be considered a substitute for, professional medical advice. Sweaty and pissed, sweaty and pissed. Menopause makes me sweaty and pissed. Hi, this is Karen Nickel, nurse practitioner.
And I'm Lee Yangan, stand-up comedian.
And we're here to talk to you about menopause and more on our podcast,
Sweaty and Pissed.
Sweaty and Pissed.
But we're not, I mean, we're sweaty and, well, you're not sweaty, you tiny thing. I'm sweaty, but sometimes I'm pissed.
Yes, easily pissed.
If I've got too much estrogen,
right,
not enough progesterone, right?
Makes for irritability. That's right. And we're going to talk a little bit more today about perimenopause and specifically the symptoms of fatigue, weight gain, and fluid retention. So,
and I've had all three.
Yes.
Not so much fluid retention as I've had fatigue. That was my main thing when I came to see you.
Yeah.
Fatigue.
I would say probably fatigue and weight gain are the two most common complaints I get from perimenopausal and menopausal women.
Yeah.
That's pretty standard. So, and, you know, in perimenopause, as we discussed in our previous episodes, is an imbalance during perimenopause, an imbalance of estrogen and progesterone happens. So we have plenty of estrogen, sometimes too much, mm-hmm. and not enough progesterone. And that imbalance is called estrogen dominance. And that can cause a lot of symptoms. And the estrogen dominance can cause lower thyroid hormone levels to be available for you to use. So we have a lot of fatigue.
Oh, that causes horrible things.
Yeah. Fatigue and weight gain. And estrogen is the hormone, not that it's the bad guy, but is the hormone that tells us to store fat and fluid because it's trying to get it, it's there to get us ready for pregnancy.
Yes, and I was going to say, will you please tell them what you told me, and this was years ago when you told me, you said estrogen is the hormone that does this, this, and this, this time of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And then progesterone does this, this, and this. Will you tell them that? Because that was so interesting.
So estrogen is highest in the first half of the cycle. Really in the second week of the cycle, it really pops up. And it tells us to store fat and fluid because it's getting ready for pregnancy because you'll need more blood volume, more fat stores. And it causes your ovary to form a cyst on it. And it's from that cyst, when it ruptures, that releases an egg. Do you remember that part?
No, I don't remember if you told me. I don't remember that part. I remember you telling me what you felt like. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I felt that since I was 12. and nobody tells you, oh, that's when when you're in PMS and you think the world's coming to an end.
Yeah.
Because you want to kill somebody. Okay.
Yeah. And you go from looking like a boy to having hips and breasts. That's all estrogen. So I'm not talking about perimenopause now, but you know, when we start our period. So so the estrogen causes a cyst formation on the ovary, cyst ruptures, releases an egg. And then from that site of the release of egg develops a mini organ called the corpus luteum, and it secretes progesterone. And it tells us, start burning those fat stores, have sex, you've got an egg.
Mm-hmm. So you feel thinner, prettier.
Yeah.
Feel sweeter towards your husband.
Yes.
the last 2 weeks, right, of the cycle. The first half of the cycle, you're angry and bitter.
Yeah, and it really it's supposed to really climb that mid-cycle, right? You know, of course, it's not secreted until you form that little corpus luteum. So, and it tells you, have sex, you've got an egg. So it bumps up sex drive, helps us burn fat and fluid. So when we go into perimenopause, sometimes that corpus luteum doesn't produce the way we'd like it to.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so we don't get enough progesterone. And sometimes the estrogen, which should drop mid-cycle, sometimes doesn't drop so soon. So we end up with a lot of premenstrual symptoms because estrogen's remaining too high and progesterone's too low. So we can get PMS, irritability, bloated. So night sweats, poor sleep. So, you know, knowing how that cycle works helps you understand what we need to do to get that better balanced. So we want estrogen to rise so that we can form a cyst on our ovary, but we don't want it crazy high. Yeah. So, so lowering estrogen really helps with the weight gain, the fatigue, the fluid retention, and bringing progesterone up. And we talked a little bit about, well, we talked quite a bit about that in the last episode about what we can do to replace progesterone and lower estrogen. So, and that's a tricky thing because these hormones are moving every month. They're not staying stationary. So it's can be tricky to balance it.
So yeah. So when you say you're up and down and up and down in perimenopause, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Especially the estrogen is swinging around and the progesterone is just usually low. So we usually dose progesterone in the last half of the cycle when it's supposed to be high. I have some women who feel better on progesterone all the time. So I do a lower dose during the first half of the cycle, as long as it's not disrupting their cycle. So, but a lot of women who just do it during the last half of the cycle, go, I feel so good during that time and not so much during the first half. So we'll add a little progesterone for that first half of the cycle, but it helps. Did you find it helped you?
Yes. Oh, I love my progesterone, but I'm on all the whole month, lower dosage, right. I guess, at night.
Right.
Cap.
Yeah. Because you...
Well, you told me when I went in, you said you have no progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
You have high estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you have no testosterone.
Right.
And, and I was on, I had a gluten thing. I mean, Lord, we can't go through all. I was going, I couldn't walk on my own feet. I was crying probably at the drop of a hat, had no drive, didn't know where I was. I mean, had ADD symptoms, which you've said that what is it that makes women my age feel like they've got ADD who've never had it before? I mean, like all of a sudden you cannot get anything done. You don't know.
Can't focus. Yeah. You know, that's a common complaint of women who have just gone into menopause. They say, I've either got ADD or dementia or both. And, you know, your brain doesn't work as well when we don't have estrogen because we have hormone receptors that help on our brain cells. So it helps us function, you know, helps with clarity of thought. And so it's theorized that's one of the reasons we see more dementia in women. Because they lose estrogen in menopause. And there have been studies that show that women who replace estrogen early in menopause have less risk of getting dementia.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Because I thought I had early onset dementia.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I thought something, and everywhere I go, women go, something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
I cannot think of my name. And everybody, and I'm not kidding, think that they have early onset dementia.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it really gives you stuck brain when you don't have estrogen. Really stuck. And it's hard, you know, when you've been sharp and, you know, in your line of work, you know, have quick wit. And I mean, that's.
Oh,
you
that's all
on
I
that.
Had going for me. And then I couldn't think of one of my daughters, well, both of them are, well, all, I should say all three of my children are very quick-witted. And so I see them and I think, oh my gosh, that used to be me. And I don't have it anymore like I used to.
Yeah.
I can throw one out every once in a while, but I don't have that. And I hate that because that was part of my shtick.
Yeah, part of your gift.
Yeah. And I remember you saying that I had ADD symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, when I had little children go in the pediatric office, I'll never forget it. All the nurses were on ADD medicine and everybody were, they were tiny in their scrubs. Nobody was eating. And they said I had to go on something because I could not think of my name.
Yeah.
So everybody was on ADD medicine.
Yeah. Yeah, because, and especially if you tend, if you have ADD tendencies, but have learned to function with it, you know, you've have a system to sort of function.
And
well.
I probably did. I probably had it and I didn't know I was from, they didn't test us back then.
Right.
I'm 52.
And it becomes painfully obvious when you hit menopause. Yeah. So sometimes we do just have to give people ADD meds, but
if you can get their hormones balanced,
it really, really helps. The problem is when you're having periods, one time in the cycle, you get, you know, that second week when estrogen goes up,
mm-hmm.
you really get a big estrogen surge and basically an estrogen bath. All your cells are bathed in estrogen, and that helps your collagen production, helps your brain, skin and hair. So in menopause, we don't dose that way. We give you estrogen to relieve the symptoms you're having, but you don't have a time every month that you are drowning in estrogen. And so that makes a difference too. That's, you know, so your daughters still have really sharp brains because they get that estrogen surge in the month.
Yeah. Oh, good for them. Okay. Can you explain to people, because when I told my family that I was taking a little estrogen at some point when you had to give me a little bit of estrogen, they were like, oh my gosh, you don't need to take that. That's horse urine and you're going to get cancer. And I had to, and you know me, I couldn't explain what you had said to me, but can you tell people the difference in bioidentical and why people need, if you have to give them a little estrogen, why? Yeah. I mean, what that does for you if you don't have it.
Yeah, well, one of our well-known manufactured estrogen replacements is manufactured or derived from pregnant mare's urine. And so it's horse estrogen, which our body can use, but it's not, the molecules are not the same as the estrogens we make. So when you metabolize it, you end up with a lot of estrogen metabolites. So it's sort of a, for lack of a better words, it's sort of a junky estrogen, you know. And when we use bioidentical hormones, you put them in your body and your body knows how to use that without making little estrogen pieces as leftovers.
Okay.
So we use it a little more cleanly, a lot more cleanly. And when we're compounding, we can use the lowest dose possible that relieves your symptoms because we're, you know, customizing it for you. And we'll get into more of this with when we talk about menopause, but I usually use two estrogens that are in our body, estriol and estradiol. And estriol is not a real stimulatory form of estrogen, so it improves safety and it can't convert into a stimulatory estrogen. So there are many several factors that help improve safety. I mean, nothing is 100% risk-free,
mm-hmm.
but what we're trying to do is relieve your symptoms in the safest way possible. So, and like I said, I think when you customize dosing, it's you have a better opportunity to relieve someone's symptoms. And that's what compounding allows us to do.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, a lot of people have that kind of reaction when you tell them you're taking some estrogen. But again, we're trying to use the lowest dose possible to relieve your symptoms. And like I said, in studies using hormones, we see far less dementia and less cardiovascular disease when we use estrogen early in menopause.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, it's hard because you get a lot of input from a lot of places, and most of those people are not hormone experts.
Right. And I had to like fight off people. How did that go? She's not going to try to kill me. This is for my good. Okay. Let me ask you this. All right. Cause I've had creams. I've had caps. You see women every once in a while. I was buying my baby a prom dress in Asheville, North Carolina one time. This little woman that owned the prom shop had gotten testosterone pellets in her butt, and her sweet little husband, and they were in their 60s. She looked like she about killed him, making him do it. And he had owned Domino's, a few franchises. He had to sell them because she was about to kill him. She goes, honey, you need to get some of these. And I was jealous. Because I thought this would make my life go a lot easier if I had these pellets. Things would go a lot easier at home, but you don't use those.
Well, I don't do pellets in my practice, but you know, there are women who do really, really well with pellets. You know, they're inserted every 3 to 4 months typically. The testosterone pellets will often get the serum levels, the blood levels, up in the male range. They'll get it like 300 and 400. And so, you know, I like when I do hormone replacement, I like it to be what we call physiologic, where it's a level that should be in a female. And so, but you know, if people do well with that, there are places that do pellet insertion. So, and we only use testosterone and estrogen pellets. You would still have to take progesterone either by cap or cream. But the estrogen levels get quite high too.
When you do,
they get like 600 and 700, you know, they get.
When you do a pellet. Mm-hmm. And so your breasts are thrombing and you're angry, but you want to do it. I don't know. That doesn't sound fun. Yeah. But it would probably be a lot easier on me in life if I did what I was supposed to. But anyway, we don't need to get into that. Forrest is in here. We don't want to let that baby hear this nasty man. Okay. All right. So back to progesterone. Yeah. So I take mine right before or about an hour or two before bed.
Right.
It relaxes me.
Yeah. Sleep promoting.
Yes.
Mood stabilizing. That and testosterone will increase sex drive, but maybe we need to do a dose adjustment for you.
Maybe. But also, you know, Chuck and I need to chat more because when he doesn't speak, you know, that, I mean, it's hard for me to do it with somebody that I don't know.
Yeah.
So we need to, now that our children are empty nesting, you know, we've got to know each, we got to get to know each other again.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think he wants to know me. I think he wants to know me in a biblical sense, but not in Forrest. I'm worrying him.
Well, and you were talking about a love language too, that maybe you guys need to figure all that out.
Yeah. Right? What do you know your love language?
Have you
read the book?
I haven't. I think it probably is. Was action one of them?
Acts of service. Are you when your husband does something for you, like go get your car cleaned, does that make you feel a tingle? So, all right, let me explain to people. 5 love languages. There's a book.
Yeah.
And there's one for your children too. And you can, you take the test and it tells you there's 5 main love languages and what your prominent love language is.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out what your spouse's is.
Right.
And then you do their love language, whatever theirs is. My husband's is acts of service.
Right.
So if I clean the garage out, build a set of shelves, whatever, you know, something horrible, he feels loved. Mine is words of affirmation. So he just has to say, you look pretty. You're a good mother, you know, and then I'm on fire and I'm able to do nasty things with him. And then he gives me money to get my hair highlighted. But okay. So, but there's also quality time.
Yes.
And some people, and I bet you know people like that just want somebody to spend quality time with them.
Yeah.
And then there's gifts. My sister, her love language is gifts, and it doesn't have to be anything expensive. It can be flowers or you know, just anything. And she feels so loved. And so I make sure that I, during her birthday and, you know, Christmas, that I really think about her because that makes her feel loved.
Yeah.
And then physical touch. And a lot of women think, oh, my husband's physical touch because he's on me like a duck on a June bug. But that is just the way God made him. And when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask him about all that. But not that I question what he did, but that, it just doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, physical touch. But it's more physical touch is not the sexual. It's the holding hands. And, you know, you may have a child that just wants to hold hands with you and sit on your lap, and or a little boy might want to wrestle with their daddy. That's physical touch. Right. They're your child's love language.
Yeah.
So anyway, you need to get the book.
So is that a pretty simple test that you take?
Yes. You just answer questions. And the Oprah had this little man on.
Oh.
It was a doll.
Oh, the author?
Yeah. Chuck and I did it with on a Sunday school retreat when our little children were little. We got a babysitter and we went on this retreat and we watched the film with all the other Sunday school people. We had a ball in that Sunday school class. Anyway, I've known that all these years. And when I do his love language for him, when he does that for me, it's complete. You will not believe how it works. It's wonderful. But you get busy and you what people tend to do, what the problem is whatever, like mine's words of affirmation. I sit and tell Chuck, your legs look beautiful. They're like a majorette. He doesn't care. I try to give him my love language. We all try to put our love language on our partner instead of doing what theirs is.
Yeah,
that doesn't work. They don't care. Chuck doesn't care if I say you're the most beautiful, you're the smartest, you're the whatever. He doesn't need that.
So if you're not a DIY person, you know, if you've got to access a service,
oh Lord,
spouse, you're
in
deep
doo-doo. Yeah, but if I can tell if I've cleaned out a part of the garage or cleaned my car out and had it washed, and then I've got a cake baking and he's almost in tears when he comes home. So I know that I need to do that, but I forget.
Yeah.
But the whole thing about the book is that you make sure you sit on the couch that night with your spouse and discuss and like give them their love language, whatever that should be. There's men, I've never understood this because Chuck's not like that. But I know I've got friends whose husbands want them to sit and watch a television show, especially like on Netflix. Like they can't watch it until they can sit there with them. Like their thing is quality time.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, if I'm just going to sit here and watch ESPN and you're just going to sit here and be bored out of your mind and watch SportsCenter with me. But you can be knitting, but they want you to just sit there with them. Thank the Lord. Chuck's never been like that. Like, he's never had, you know, had to meet me to be up his butt. Not only him up my butt. But I know people that are like that. And I'm like, I got to watch Handmaid's Tale when it comes on. You know, when this new episode's coming on or
watching
The Crown.
It. Yes. Watching it.
And Chuck wants to watch Viking shows where they're knocking people's heads off and damsels with their breasts heaving and they knock somebody's head off or something horrible off a horse. I hate that mess. But anyway, so that's not our problem. We've got other problems, but that ain't one of them.
Yeah.
So, the quality time.
Well, that sounds like a good book to check out.
Yeah, the five love languages. And you can do it for your little children too and find out their love language. Because all three of my children are so different.
Gosh,
yeah. And they have different needs, you know?
Yeah, but we have four different love languages.
Well, I'm exhausted. I know. I've got a lot of love to give. But, you know, they're all so yummy that I don't mind.
You don't mind.
I know.
Well, you're multi-talented, so that makes it a lot better too.
And see, if I'd have just had one child, I would have smothered them. Because, you know, if my son had been my first and only, oh my word. Because I've been in love with him. He is so sweet and precious, that first child.
Yeah.
You know, it's so, well, most of the time, ordinal positioning.
Yeah.
A child wants to please the first one.
Yeah.
And so he was always so easy.
Yeah.
So
Forrest must have felt pretty smothered. He's raising his eyebrows.
I would have smothered you to death, Forrest. I would have sat at high school with you in the cafeteria, and you would have wanted to kill me.
Yeah.
Well, finally, Charlie said to me one time, please don't come to my high school and smell of me. I was like, okay.
Stop coming in smelling my hair.
Yes, because he still smells so good. Anyway, now we're getting twisted. And he'll have to hear this sometime. But anyway, okay.
Well, so, you know, we talked about, the Love Language book, a really great book to read if you want to know more about perimenopause, is a book by Dr. John Lee. He was a Harvard grad, family practice for over 30 years, and really dedicated his life to understanding specifically progesterone function in women. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So he has several books, and one of them is called What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Premenopause.
Oh.
Yeah. And so it talks a lot about what we've just talked about. We're, about low progesterone, the importance of replacing progesterone. It is not a medical textbook, but it's a little on the dense side, but it's definitely written for the lay person. So it's really, really good. If you want to understand the perimenopausal hormone imbalance issue, that would be an excellent book to get. Dr. John Lee, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Premenopause.
Oh, okay.
And of course, you can purchase it on the place where everybody purchases books these days.
Are we not allowed to say it?
I don't.
Amazon, surely we can say it, can't we? We need to be sponsored by Amazon, because I get all my essential oils
from Amazon.
From Amazon,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So yes, you can get.
I get everything.
So far any books that we'll recommend, you can get on Amazon. So
oh, good.
So that's
you're
a good
such
one.
A reader.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good to know. And in our next episode, we'll talk about. We've got so many, like 30 topics
for perimenopause. Alone. Yeah, we're going to talk. I was thinking we could talk about mood changes and the foggy thinking thing, but we covered the foggy thinking part pretty well, I think.
Okay, and we have tried me on ADD medicine, and I got nervous.
Yeah,
and it was too much for me, and I didn't sleep well.
Yeah, probably because when people with ADD take an ADD med, they don't usually get that stimulant effect. So it's probably something you didn't need.
I didn't need it, but I begged you for it. And you did it to just see.
Just
trial.
Because
you knew I had a career and a bunch of laundry.
Yeah.
And dirty
stuff
closets.
To do. Stuff
yeah.
to do.
And a dirty car.
Yeah.
And
you have all kinds of acts of service you need to get done.
Yes.
So,
and being a creative person, sometime we need to talk about on an episode that you understand me because you being a performer
mm-hmm.
and how you've doctored me because I'm a performer and the difference that is in someone who's not a performer, different medications and different, or just things that we've talked about because you understand.
Yeah, I think it's a career that most people don't know because it's a tough career. Not that other people don't have tough careers, but it's very competitive and you got to want it really badly to do it because it's hard work, especially when you have a family.
And when you are when you like trying to make people laugh, like it kind of sucks a life out of me. I love it.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot.
Yeah.
For, to do a 45-minute set at night is like I'm climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. And you get that in me.
Yeah.
Because you're a performer. Well, yeah. Okay. So with next episode, we'll talk more about perimenopause symptoms.
That's right. We will.
And all the other crap that you've had to help me with.
We'll do it.
Okay.
Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Sweaty and pissed. Sweaty.